A fascinating new conflict is now raging. It's more a war of words yet. It's a conflict between France and Turkey. And this is a probable conflict. At the same time, it's unlikely. Now, I will explain to you how we square the two. It's probable because France traditionally has seen itself as the center of global liberalism. And this France, under Macron, who is a liberal, is now acting against what it sees as a threat from radical Islam, particularly after the beheading of school teacher Samuel Paty, who demonstrated in one of his lectures in the class on liberalism the cartoons on the Holy Prophet that angers Muslims. On the other hand, Erdogan. Now, Turkey was never really a major power anywhere, but Turkey under Recep Tayyip Erdogan, I hope I pronounce it right, he now sees Turkey as the global guardian of pan-Islamism or Islam, because he thinks that the Arab countries, particularly Saudi Arabia, are vacating that position in the Sunni universe and he can move in there. So he's got some allies, he's got Pakistan, he's got now it seems to some extent Azerbaijan, and he's had Malaysia in his pocket and out of it. So he thinks now that he has the muscle to speak on behalf of all Muslims and take that leadership. That's what makes this conflict probable. What makes it unlikely, on the other hand, is that Turkey is a member of NATO. Turkey and France are both members of NATO. This is a very close strategic and military alliance. There is a lot shared between them, so much so that a bunch of American nuclear bombs are also stored in Turkey in the Air Force base at Incirlik, which NATO is based at. So in spite of that, Turkey and France are at odds with each other. Also, Turkey is a transcontinental nation. It's part Asian, part European. So far, for the past many decades, it has tried very hard, beginning with Atatürk a long time back, almost 100 years ago. Beginning with his periods, Turkey has tried to see itself more as a European nation and come closer to European values, way of life, lifestyle, quality of life. In fact, Turkey had a real prospect of joining EU but got into odds there or had some problems because its human rights laws and some of the other norms did not quite conform to EU, and once Erdogan came in, he has changed all that. Now Turkey sees itself in a different category altogether. So unlikely because NATO partners, unlikely because European, but likely because one, a guardian of global liberalism, which is now fighting with radical Islam, and one who sees itself himself now as the guardian of global pan-Islamism. Now, first of all, what's happened in France? Now, since the killing of Samuel Paty, the school teacher, by beheading by a young teenager, a teenage Muslim, who was angered that he displayed the cartoons on the Prophet, there's been a big pushback from France. So much so, there have been protests, and those cartoons have now been displayed in large size on landmarks of Paris. That has upset a lot of Muslims all over the world. You've seen a big procession in Dhaka with 40,000 plus people coming out. You've seen many global leaders, Muslim leaders, complain about this, not to miss out Imran Khan. But the sharpest response has come from Erdogan. Now, what has France done? In fact, if you look at what's going on in Srinagar today, which is the raids on Kashmiri NGOs, some media people, intellectual organizations, activists. Something very similar has happened in France. Unlikely comparison, India in Kashmir and France in that liberal El Dorado. But the fact is that the French police and authorities have carried out more than 120 raids, pretty much on similar places, that is Muslim think tanks, Muslim intellectual groups, Muslim activist groups, etc., etc., in search for radical influences. I take quite a bit of this detail from Stephen Erlanger's article in the New York Times, and we'll share that article with you and many others for background. So Erlanger says in his article that look, in the last 8 years, there have been more than 36 attacks which owe their origin to Islamic State in France. Hundreds of people have died, including two attacks in which more than 200 people have died. And yet, now the kind of sharp reaction that you've seen from France, you've not seen before. That could be because in a couple of years, French presidential elections are coming in. That could also be that this was the last straw on the camel's back. That you have a school teacher walking in a street, the French swear by their secularism and swear by their liberal values. Anybody can say anything, freedom of speech. The French don't have a blasphemy law, nor do they believe in it. So you use that, kill one of our citizens, we will respond sharply, which is what has happened. But look at some of the words spoken in France. Now Macron himself, who's not known to speak harsh words, he's talked about a crisis in Islam, and he says that French Islam in France needs an enlightenment. It's a loaded word given Islamic and Christian history. So he says Islam in France needs an enlightenment. Then speaking to his defense council, he used one more strong line. He said fear will now change sides. A bit like Julio Ribeiro in Punjab said bullet for bullet. Fear in France will now change sides. Dekh main aata hu, tu janta nahi main kaun hu. It's a bit like that. It's a bit of a threat. His interior minister, on the other hand, has talked about a civil war. Another minister, and I picked it up, in fact, in the discussion groups, another minister has said that France now faces a threat, not just France. Europe faces a threat from what he describes as Islamo-leftism. So he's drawing a connection between left-wing intellectuals and radical Islam. Now for French ruling party, and this is not a government of the right, for them to use these expressions is a big change in France. Now France has a challenge there, because France has almost 10% of its population consisting of Muslims. Most of these Muslims have come from former French colonies. So France is about 6.7 crore people. I'd say anything between 65 to 70 lakh people are Muslims. They are very much French. In fact, if you look at the French football team, there are several Muslim players there from former French colonies. And the French also traditionally take pride in their multiculturalism. Now, this reaction in France, particularly from Macron, has then drawn, as I said, adverse reaction. The strongest has come from Erdogan. What did Erdogan said? Erdogan said Macron needs mental treatment. He said, what is the problem of this person, Macron, with Muslims and Islam? Right? Now, no other Muslim country has used language like that. But a lot of Muslims have applauded this statement, some openly, some maybe quietly. If you live in Saudi Arabia, you will applaud it quietly. If you live in Pakistan or Bangladesh, even maybe, you will applaud it loudly. Pakistan, most of all. Then Imran Khan, a bunch of tweets, and you will see some. He's attacked France and Macron also, really saying that don't allow anybody to insult our prophet. That's a good appeal to make. But also that we get angry by this, and I had said at the UN also in my speech at the UN General Assembly that if anybody insults our holy prophet, we get very angry. So that is almost taking you to the root causes theory of terror, which means because you offend me, I then have the right to blow up something or behead somebody or kill people, just anybody. So this is justification for terrorism and violent activity, which is problematic. But I told you a couple of days earlier that Imran now styles himself after Erdogan. He's Erdogan's in many ways. If Erdogan is Don Quixote, this is Sancho Panza. So the line I had used earlier, don't forget that. Wo Erdogan, main chota Erdogan. So Erdogan has made these nasty statements. Imran has made sanctimonious statements, but they are also quite strong given where Pakistan features vis-a-vis France. And then you've had this funny situation in Pakistan with the National Assembly calling for Pakistan to withdraw its ambassador from Paris when actually they haven't had an ambassador there for some time. And unanimously, they have condemned France. It's also odd that everybody, all these countries are condemning France, but they will not raise a question about Uyghurs in China. That besides, we talked about that. You've seen the Saudis have issued a very general statement saying that we don't like any insult to the Prophet. UAE has also done something similar. Jordan has done something similar. Those are motherhood and apple pie, or early to bed and early to rise, makes a man healthy, wealthy and wise, kind of platitudinous statements. Nobody has taken on France, but Turkey has. And Turkey has also talked about boycotting French goods. And who else has joined in to that boycott call but Turkey's buddy, but Turkey's Muslim Brotherhood buddy, Qatar, which may be from some chain of French restaurants, has decided that ingredients imported from France will not be used. It so happened that pictures surfaced yesterday of Erdogan's wife carrying a $50,000 Hermes bag. French, maybe it's an older picture, but reputed people, a person like François Heisberg, who is really the uncle of strategic community in Europe, he also tweeted that to basically point out the contradictions of this situation. Can Turkey afford to fight EU? Can Turkey afford to fight France? Now, Turkey and France, there is another complication there. Because Turkey right now, in that area under Erdogan, has risen as a nuisance state. Turkey has taken pangas with all its neighbors. All it has got into the problems of all its neighboring states. So Turkey is fighting big time in Libya. The Turks are playing a very interesting role in Syria, which sometimes is at odds with Russians, sometimes is not. In Libya, their role is at odds with Russians. In Azerbaijan, they are now helping Azerbaijanis against Armenia, and that is something that Russians see as interference in an area that they say that they see as area of their core interests. Erdogan has irritated India more than once, in fact several times. If you see Turkish official media, TRT for example, Turkish TV stations, on the anniversary of what we observed as the Pakistan invasion by Pakistani guerrillas or Pakistani raiders into Kashmir, they ran programs calling it an invasion by Indian military into Kashmir. So if you look, watch TRT and some of this Turkish official media, they are in fact, if anything, nastier to India on Kashmir than even Pakistani media, if such a thing is possible. But you see that. So there is this Erdogan now lighting up fires everywhere. Now look at the map of the world around Turkey and see the countries where Turkey has joined the trouble. I'm not saying got into trouble, but joined the trouble, existing trouble, or has stirred up trouble. So there is Eastern Mediterranean with Greece, where it is now going and claiming hydrocarbon reserves in areas that Greece considers its own. Remember, Greece is also a NATO country, and the French have come to Greece's help. So that's one more conflict point with France. Then there is Syria, where the Turks think that they can bring about a conclusion or a power balance at the end of the fighting, whenever that end takes place, which suits their larger strategic interests, because they also compete with Iraq on the one hand and the Arab Middle East on the other, and Egypt. Israel, the Turks profess friendship with Hamas, and anytime they want to irritate Israelis, they meet another Hamas leader, because they think that also helps them in the Islamic world, because they're also competing with Iran in a way. Then there is Cyprus, with which the Turks have had an old problem. There is also Iraq, because then you have the Kurds. Kurds have territories in Iraq, in Turkey, in Syria, and then Armenia, Azerbaijan, and Egypt. So a tiny country, and if you think all that's not enough, then they go and stir up trouble with India over Kashmir more than once. And Erdogan keeps at it all the time, not just Kashmir. In fact, even when the riots and killings in Delhi took place, he made that famous statement. Who's dying in India? It's Muslims. Who's killing Muslims in India? It's Hindus. No other head of state anywhere in the world said that besides the Pakistanis. But Erdogan did it. Now, read an article from Bobby Ghosh, our own Bobby Ghosh, who used to be the editor of Hindustan Times until a couple of years back. And Bobby is an authority on Middle Eastern politics and strategic issues. He's also been a correspondent based in Baghdad in very tough times. So Bobby says in this long article in Bloomberg, which I am sharing with you, that there was a time in 2010 when the Turks, in terms of foreign policy, were seen as a zero problem country. Today they are seen as a nothing but problems country by everybody. Now, in this situation, many countries have been tough on Turkey, but many are being careful. Now, Trump, for example, he is irritated with Turkey. They had a conflict in Syria with the Turks, but he still indulges Erdogan because they are two of a type. Then you have the Arab world. You know the Khashoggi murder in Turkey. Now, obviously, what happened, the murder was a terrible thing, but Turks are not any great supporters of civil rights or human liberty. Turks have locked up a lot of journalists, dissidents, intellectuals in jail. They've exiled thousands of them. So they are not nice guys in that sense. But Turks made a big deal of that murder because that was also for them a way of embarrassing Saudi Arabia. Moscow now, the Turks have irritated by moving into the trouble in Azerbaijan, between Azerbaijan and Armenia, and Russians don't like it. In fact, Putin sees him as a nuisance, but so far Erdogan has been careful not to push it too far. So 2015 autumn, Erdogan's forces had shot down a Russian Sukhoi, and then Putin had issued a very strong statement. Putin had said this is a treacherous stab in the back. Immediately after that, what happened? Erdogan issued a written apology, because one bully does not want trouble with another bully. And in any case, if push comes to the shove, then Putin is a much bigger bully than Erdogan. So like all bullies do, faced with a bigger one, he had his tail between his legs. He apologized and got done with it. But now Russia is again getting exercised over what they are doing in Azerbaijan and Armenia. Now, if you read Bobby Ghosh, he goes into great detail on why Erdogan does what he does. And he says, look, if he wanted strategic power, he doesn't have it. He doesn't have the military to go and get his conclusions even in his neighborhood. It's an 8-crore country. 8-crore country with a good per capita income, about $9,000, but declining right now. Also a declining economy. He doesn't have the economic power. So if he wanted really economic benefit, he should have gone and said nice things to India instead of stirring up trouble with India. So he says that he's basically trying to see, he's punching above his weight, but he thinks that he can become a global, mid-sized global power because it's an unstable world. He's a Sunni Islamic country. Other Sunni Islamic powers are weak. So those Sunni Islamic countries, or predominantly Sunni Islamic countries like Pakistan, Malaysia, which have large Muslim populations, they will begin to see him as a leader. So to that extent, this is that neo-Ottomanism coming in. So he's got the ego now of an Ottoman ruler. And you've had this Turkish teleserials come out, Ertugrul and others, which feed into that. It does seem to me somehow that maybe Erdogan is watching them on the loop, as they say, or binge watching them and taking those much too seriously, because he is now acquired an ego which is running way ahead of his country's real strength, particularly the economic strength. So before we conclude, we have to look at Turkey's economy. Turkey's economy at this point is in a shambles. Erdogan's own ratings have been coming down, popularity ratings, although the last few weeks of saber rattling, particularly with France, have brought in a little improvement, because when rulers fail with the economy, fail with strategic issues, fail with everything else, unemployment is running at 15%, inflation is running at 12%, you find nationalism and religion. And if you can combine the two, even better. So Erdogan has done that. But look at the state of his economy. His inflation is running at 12%. His lira has lost 26% against the dollar in this calendar year. In fact, in the last 12 months, it has lost 33% against the dollar. In fact, if you go back to the beginning of 2018, a dollar would buy only 3.5 lire. Today, a dollar buys 8.5 lire, and the lira is still declining. This after in the last 12 months, and these are Goldman Sachs estimates, Turkish Central Bank has spent $134 billion just trying to shore up their currency. Now you may say $134 billion, how to put that in perspective? I will tell you. Turkey's total foreign exchange reserves today are about $33 billion only. If you also add gold reserves, then it comes to about $80 billion. This is very small for an economy of Turkey's size. Certainly, this is not a situation where Turkey can now keep on shoring up its own currency. So what are the Turks doing? And there's an article in from CNBC, and they quote a professor at American University of Cairo who points out that the Turks actually are taking away or borrowing the dollar savings that their citizens and their businesses have in their banks. Now, does that sound familiar? Go back to the cut the clutter we did on Lebanon. How did Lebanon get into trouble? They also got into trouble because their government began borrowing from foreign exchange deposits made by their own citizens in their own banks to shore up their own currency and balance of payment. So in fact, if I read this professor Angus Blair, he says, he uses the word hard-headed economic policies, but I think what he means is bull-headed. It is bull-headed because also Erdogan, all these dictators know that they are professors of economics also, and they have a dislike for people who have genuine scholarship, particularly in economics, because economics is so tied into their politics. So he believes that raising interest rates, so what happens when inflation goes up, your central bank raises interest rates and curtails money supply. He's doing the opposite because he thinks that raising interest rates increases inflation. Now, because I have the power, I can define my own economics. Harvard, Sharvard, sab khatam hai, you've heard that before. So he's actually got his central bank to keep rates low. So for a long time, his rates have been 8.5%, his inflation is 12%. So effectively, he's been giving money to his people, to his borrowers at negative interest rates, below inflation. And he's been liberally doling out those loans, putting pressure on the banks to give more and more loans in the hope that that will shore up his economy. So what happens then? This is like feeding gulab jamuns or petha, it came from Turkey, mind you, or petha or maybe halwa, that also came from Turkey to India. So feeding petha, gulab jamuns and halwa to a diabetic, because then your sugar levels will go higher and higher and higher, and that's precisely what's happened with Turkey. So in fact, if you see all this, it does look like Turkey has no option now but to go to the IMF. Once you go to the IMF, then that redefines your sovereignty. That also puts many limitations to how nutty you can be. Erdogan does not want to go to IMF. So what does he think? All dictators have wishful thinking. He thinks that if he wins the war in Libya, which he seems to be doing quite well in with right now, then we'll get 18-20 billion worth of construction contracts. Turkey is a big construction power. He also thinks that he might get some more businesses here and there. But really, if you look at all this, he is biting off more than he can chew. And now he's taken on the French. I know the French have problems. There's also an article today from Pankaj Mishra, who's a commentator of the cultural left, who said that the French statements on Islam now are endangering France's reputation. But Macron seems to have taken that decision. So if France goes that way, then Turkey's leverage in being able to counter that beyond throwing insults at Macron is limited. But the damage it can do to his economy and his strategic interests, particularly if there is a change in America and Biden comes in, that would be quite substantive, in which case he could end up being somebody who tried to really fight in a league much above his weight category and then got clobbered in the process. We are not sure what will happen, but right now Erdogan is taking risks which very few people in the world would find prudent at this point of time.